Have you been injured at work and need help getting the benefits you deserve? Call me, attorney Steve Marte, at 312-312-HURT for a free consultation. That's 312-312-HURT. I will personally handle your claim from start to finish. Call me, Steve Marte, today.
All right, so there's no Sox game tonight. They're going to make it up in a day-night doubleheader in New York Sunday. So they're the Sunday night baseball game, and then they're going to play earlier in that day. So another doubleheader this week. That's their second doubleheader. It's been a strange schedule for the White Sox. It was a weird Kansas City series, and they did come back in nice fashion yesterday. The bats came to life. Len Casper joins us weekly. He is the voice of the White Sox, and he joins Waddle and Sylvie with Meller in for Waddle today. Hey, Len.
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're fantastic. Let's start with my idea, because I was a huge fan of the Iowa game last year, Field of Dreams. And obviously, yeah, we played your highlight earlier. And this year, they have Cubs and Reds. How they came to that, I don't know. So my idea is to take the game that was postponed today and flex out Cubs and Reds and move that game to Iowa later in the season. Are you buying it? For a rematch, Sox-Yanks.
Okay, I love the idea. I love that you thought of this. Here's where I'm gonna decline. I don't think they should be playing in Iowa again for a few years at all. I think this Field of Dreams concept should move around, and they should try to go to all the states that don't have major league teams and just build a ballpark. That's what they did for last year's game. I just don't know if you can top last year, no matter who the opponents are. And while you're going to sell out 8,000 seats, and I do think Reds and Cubs fans will go, regardless of the record, the way that game played out, like, go somewhere else, you know? And my hope is that they'll do that at some point. I kind of thought it would be fun to do a midnight game in Alaska.
Yeah.
You know, like under the sun, you know, where I think, I don't know when it is. I'm assuming in mid-June, the sun never really goes down in Alaska. Like, how cool would that be? So something like that. So, no, I wouldn't want to go back to Iowa for a few years, but I think playing in Idaho or near the Grand Canyon or something, although, but just go to some other places that don't have big league ball.
I like that. Like, make it like kind of like the Winter Classic, where it's moving and it's a really cool venue every time and it's unique.
I think we might have lost Len for a moment there. But no, I echo those sentiments that Len just gave us, because the way that played out, you said it earlier, Sylvie, when you said it was one of the best moments for baseball in a long, long time.
On the field, right.
Initially, I was thinking, as we were playing the highlight of Len's call of the walk-off home run last year at the Field of Dreams game, I was thinking to myself, that was, as a Sox fan, for me, the highlight of last year, even though they made the playoffs. That game, when I think of like the entire season, that's the moment that stands out. It felt so awesome to beat the Yankees, and to hear Len's call on ESPN 1000 was fantastic. And he's right. It's not just that, hey, you had Kevin Costner open the festivities, right? Like, you can't
do that.
Kevin Costner can't come out again this year,
yeah,
right? Like, that'd be weird.
Yeah, So, Len, I was comparing it to the Winter Classic, where that's cool because it's a new venue all the time.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, the tagline works too. Like, if you build it, they will come.
Yeah,
right. That works everywhere. So, you know, that's probably why I'm not in charge of marketing. I have crazy ideas, and they haven't taken me up on it yet.
No, they should hire you. They should. Your crazy ideas are usually good ideas.
All right, Len. So the White Sox get back to 500 with a win over the Royals yesterday. How are you feeling about the White Sox right now? I think most Sox fans are a little bit disappointed. They're at this point trailing in the division. But, of course, we're trying to stay positive and understand that it's a long season. They've weathered the storm of some injuries. How are you feeling about them right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a mixed bag. And obviously, when you're 500, you get that. And those starts tend to be the most fascinating, because there's been a lot of good and a lot of bad kind of mixed in together. I think it's safe to say yesterday's win in Kansas City was their biggest of the year. You lose that game, you're two games under coming to New York to play the team with the best record in baseball. That's not ideal, but you come back down 4-1, you take some walks, you score some runs, you keep some innings, you string some hits together. I really liked offensively what they did. And Vince Velasquez was able to get his way through five innings and keep his team in the game. But that aside, you know, one thing I want to point out to you guys and White Sox fans listening, there's an extra playoff team this year in each league. And when you think about the big picture here, last year the White Sox won the division, but they were the number three division winner. Under this current playoff system, the White Sox would have had to play the Toronto Blue Jays in the wild card round just to get to the Astros in the division round. All right? Right. So that third division winner is kind of like a wild card team now, which is a little scary. Mm-hmm. It makes it even harder to get through the postseason. Well, at last check, the White Sox are one game out of a wild card spot. So as bad as it's felt here early on, they're actually in a pretty good position right now. And you may say, yeah, that's because everything's watered down. And you're right. But more than ever, it's just paramount that you get there. And I still believe, and I would think most White Sox fans believe, that this team is going to finish well above 500, should at the very least be one of those wild card teams. And even if they do win this division, there's a possibility, if not a strong one, that they'll have to play a wild card team in that first round. So I'm not saying their position is set at this point. You'd obviously like to avoid that first round. But they have bigger fish to fry in terms of making sure defensively they're really good, getting better offensively, getting Lance Lynn back and pitching every 5 days in the rotation. Kind of the playoff thing is so far down the road. And on top of it, what I just mentioned to you, I'm not really worried about that right now. They have other things they have to do to get hot.
What do you put your finger on with the offense, Len? Because Tim Anderson is just, and it's the typical he goes, they go, because he's just crushing it. And he made sure they wouldn't lose that game yesterday. And then Robert bounced back nicely. And he had been hot for a while before a down game or two. But he's been awesome. So two of your best players have been hitting the baseball, but it doesn't seem like the rest of the lineup has followed through. What's been the main issue?
Well, I think that there's a lot of things, but I would say in general, when you look at the White Sox lineup, and, you know, I think ideally with every good lineup, there's a dynamic nature to it in that not every guy does the same thing. In the case of the White Sox, Tim and Luis are guys who swing the bat. They're not going to take a lot of walks. You hope they hit for a high average, and that's how they're going to get their damage done. Jose Abreu generally fits that description, even though he has walked a lot more often to start the season. So with those guys doing what they do, you got to have the guys who take walks do that. That's what they're good at. Yasmani Grandal, Yoan Moncada is now back. I think Andrew Vaughn would fit this category as his career moves along. Last year that happened. The guys who take walks took walks, and the guys who hit for average, and it really made for a very dynamic lineup. Right now, it feels like too many guys are swinging at too many pitches. And, you know, Tim and Luis do that. I'm not saying they should be more patient. I think some of the other guys in the lineup have gotten into some bad habits, and they'd probably be the first to tell you that that's been the case.
All right, Len, when you get the notice that you have yourself a postponement in New York, I have to think a bit of a wry smile comes across your face, realizing that you've got a Friday night in New York City that was unanticipated. What's the plan for a New York evening for a Len Casper when it was impromptu?
Well, you can probably hear the din in the background. A few people from the staff are going to go out and have a nice meal here in New York. Not that there aren't, you know, many good restaurants here, but we're going to find a good place.
That is awesome. This has been the most New York phone call ever, too, from the traffic directing. You could hear the whistles and everything like that. Have a great night, Len. Can't wait to hear you back on the air tomorrow, and then for the doubleheader on Sunday. We appreciate everything.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
There you go. There's Len Casper. Did you see today, too? I think Vaughn was going to hit second. So now, like, one day Vaughn's hitting ninth. Now he's hitting, like, what do they have against batting Robert second? Does he just want someone in between Anderson and Robert? Like, it could be, like, think how dynamic the top of that order can be. He was talking about dynamic. Yeah. Or is it because they swing and they don't take pitches?
I think part of it, listen, I think Tony's philosophy is that he can, when whoever he sneaks into that second spot, he thinks, whether or not you agree with this, and I, when I say you, I mean, you know, the listeners out there, he thinks that they're going to, he's setting them up for success, because in between Tim Anderson and Luis Robert, they're probably going to see the best pitches of anybody in the lineup. Now, whether or not lineup protection is actually a thing, that's been debated. You know, I'm kind of with you, Sylvie. I would just prefer to have Tim Anderson and Luis Robert get the most at-bats possible.
Where's Shohei and Trout batting these days?
So Trout's usually because the problem is that the Angels have so many great hitters.
Trout's two and Shohei's usually three now from what it
is.
Trout does bat second.
Trout bats second.
Now, last year, before he got hurt, Trout was usually hitting third. So, but I haven't checked, you know,
I followed all their games this year. I don't know why, because...
Why. Don't you got Shohei on your fantasy team
there? No, I've got Trout to win MVP.
Oh, that's there you go. So we know there's a reason. There's
Come
a
on,
financial
Merck plays
game.
In an NL-only league.
That's a good point. look, the best hitters, you would want them hitting two or three. Yeah, you know, or two and three, ideally. And Tim Anderson just happens to be one of your best two hitters who is capable of leading off. So, yeah, for me, it would make sense to go Tim Anderson, Luis Robert, but
And then Abreu after that. Abreu's going to hit, yes. Right? I mean,
and drive in runs. If anything, I do know that Jose Abreu excels at driving in runs. And whether or not that's a skill set you truly believe in, it's undeniable.
That
Jose Abreu,
year
in and year out, will drive in runs. You know, so him hitting third, I think, would be a good idea.
I thought I heard, maybe it was when, Carmen's been big this week saying that Abreu's top 10 in hard hit balls.
Yes, I think three or four, somewhere around there.
But I heard, as far as line drives go, like line drive percentage, which he's way down this year as far as that goes. So, I mean, it's definitely been a down year for him, but usually when it gets warmer, he starts playing better. So
that's true. He does. He hit historically, Abreu's kind of better.
Yeah, I'm still thinking that he's going to have a by the time it's over, while he may not hit all of his highs or all of his averages, he's going to hit. I don't think he's a worry. I don't think, like, when are you going to get Aloy back? Some of these other guys who are playing other positions, is Gavin Sheets going to take the next step? Is Vaughn the real deal? Who's playing second base every day?
Yoan Moncada. Now that he's back from injury, is he going to become the player that he was a few years ago before COVID hit?
Is he
going
to hit home runs?
Yeah. Or listen, I can home runs. I don't even need him to be a 20 home run guy if he's getting out. You know, he hit 315 and had an on base close to 400 a few years ago. If he's that player, you're okay with the lack of power, but he needs to get on base at that clip to be hitting second like he is at times.
Grandal, what does he have left in the tank, you know?
Yeah.
And then you're always trying to figure out who's the DH, like, because Grandal can't catch all the time and shouldn't, and he's not a good catcher. He's terrible defensively. And then Reese McGuire's playing all the time, and he's a 190 hitter. And that's a reason why Toronto's willing to trade him. He's great as far as a catcher, but like most catchers, you can usually do one thing well. Either hit or you're a good defensive catcher.
Yeah, and you know, I do wonder, like, as Len talked about, they're in decent position, assuming they get to the playoffs. You know, Reese McGuire might be the guy who starts more games behind the plate with Grandal as your DH in the playoffs, because you want to optimize your catcher behind the plate come playoff time.
I'm trying to process this here then. So Reese McGuire is going to be catching because he's better defensively, Grandal. So he's your DH. So Aloy's playing left field.
Mm-hmm. I would think so, assuming he's healthy. You'll have
and then Vaughn's your right fielder,
probably. You know, maybe Sheets, depending on the matchup, the pitching matchup, he could play. He could be a right fielder,
right?
If
he's
one
of their few lefties who hits.
Because Mel and I were talking about this yesterday, the moves that the White Sox can make at the trade deadline. Probably not very much in terms of if you want to go out and get a bat or something like that and or at second. Because
it's second, right? I mean, that's still the void. That could have been addressed before the year because of all the versatile players on your team and who were available on the market. Did you want to pick up a shortstop? You can move Tim Anderson. Did you want to pick up a third baseman? You could move Moncada to second base.
Yep.
Did you want to pick a more dynamic second baseman? You could have plugged and played that guy. But instead, they chose to get a 34-year-old player who is basically a replacement level player.
I'll tell you what, Josh Harrison is a really good player to have on your 26-man roster, but not as a designated starter every day.
No.
Like if he's a utility man, he plays a really good role.
But that's what Lurie Garcia does.
You're right.
And Lurie Garcia should not be starting tons of games in right field and at second base.
No.
And he's in the lineup so much.
Yeah.
So, all right, the Jimmy Butler,
you read my mind.
Yeah. Then I want to get into some of the Zach LaVine stuff, too, and place an interview that Cap did. We could move into that and talk about some of the spring trading as well.
I've been hearing this a lot. I heard, you know, is Jimmy Butler, has he ascended to superstar status? I heard you and Black, when we had spring trading on Wednesday, I heard you guys discuss a little bit about Jimmy Butler, and you know, I agree with your take, by the way, that if Jimmy Butler had, if the Bulls had stayed, if Jimmy Butler had stayed with the Bulls, in all likelihood, the John Paxson, Gar Foreman era, there would have been a run in somehow, some way, and it would have fallen apart.
He would have, like, if they didn't trade him to Minnesota, there would have eventually been a time.
I agree
this
completely.
This is the, like, you think that John Paxson's going to hire Jim Boylan and Jimmy Butler's going to stand for that after he had Fred Hoiberg running the team? Like, think about all these dumb moves and all the blow-ups that they've had with numerous successful people where ultimately Reinsdorf sides with his front office and then the front office wins and they get rid of the player or the coach.
And we saw how it played out in Minnesota with Tom Thibodeau, the guy who chose Jimmy Butler to come play with him, you know, in Minnesota and rebuild that thing. We saw how that played out. And then in Philly, whether or not you think Philly chose, you know, who they chose, if they actually chose other people over
Butler.
Well,
they did, yeah. I mean,
did Jimmy Butler make it a situation because they had Ben Simmons on the roster? Did Jimmy Butler also make it to a point where they, whether or not they really wanted to, did he force his way out of that situation?
No,
as well?
I don't think there wasn't a Butler Simmons thing, was there? It was wasn't it more about choosing what's his face, who's just
Tobias Harris?
Harris and paying Ben Simmons. Like, because then did they eventually give Ben Simmons the big money deal?
Yeah, yes, but they were always locked into Ben Simmons, especially at that point. I think Jimmy Butler, now again, I think the Sixers were in a bad spot because they didn't know exactly who Ben Simmons was at that point. They still thought they could build their roster around him and Embiid, and I think we've learned that Ben Simmons is not somebody who, you know, you want to build your team around. Nevertheless, though, Jimmy Butler, is he a superstar in your mind?
I don't understand. This was my point, one of my topics for the show the other day when Carmen and I did it. Why are we so scared to say that? Like, we are always caught in the moment with so many players. I heard on the station a week ago today, Giannis could be the next Michael. No one's ever going to be Giannis again, only to have him lose on game 6 on his home floor, then not be able to make a layup in the second half of game 7. We all get stuck in the moment. We all overhype what we've seen on the floor. Mm-hmm. Oh, did you see what Luka did? And it's fantastic. Luka's a superstar, but he's going to be one of the greatest ever. On and on and on. And oh, Kyrie Irving, he could have the best skill set of any point guard who has ever played the game. But yet Jimmy Butler does it year in and year out, and all he does is win. And every time he leaves a team, they get worse. And every time he goes to the new team gets better. And we are scared for some reason to say, give Jimmy his due. He's a star or a superstar.
Oh, I'll get, like, and this is again where we really quibble with the word superstar. I personally have 8 players who I label NBA superstars, and I have Jimmy Butler in the 9-10 spot of almost superstars, right there on the cusp.
Okay. So,
let me give you my 8.
Can I guess?
Let's see if we're on the same page.
Let me pull up the standings just so I make sure I don't miss a team here. You're obviously going to go with all the 3 MVP candidates with Embiid, the Joker who won it again this year, and Giannis.
Correct.
Going those 3 you start with. Then KD is number 4.
Mm-hmm.
Number 5, I'm trying to think if you're going with Kyrie.
No.
Okay, so you're not going with Kyrie. Let me look here.
There's one obvious one.
Let me just look at the team.
Sure.
Is Jamal Tatum, is he on your list?
Jason Tatum, I have.
Jason Tatum.
I have him next on my list of almost superstars, right there above Jimmy Butler on the almost superstars.
Is LeBron still a superstar in your mind?
I still have him labeled as a superstar.
Steph and Luka's got to be there.
Correct.
Those are obvious ones.
And there's one who might slip your mind because he's kind of not readily available these days.
Kawhi Leonard.
Bingo.
When so Kawhi's still a superstar
when he's
in your
on
mind.
When he's on the court, he's done enough taking being the the finals MVP for two different teams. I still have Kawhi as a superstar right now. But I'll give you, there's an asterisk on his name right now. And if for some reason next year he's not in the mix, I'm willing to remove him from the superstar
list. I don't believe you can, like, 1 year there could be five superstars. The next year there could be 12. I don't think there's, like, a list, like a Mount Rushmore where there could only be four or a top five where there's only five.
I agree with you, though. I'm completely fluid about the idea of guys of 1 year having 10 superstars. And I'll tell you, if Jimmy Butler leads the Heat past this Celtics team. And
see, this is, I think, unfair. This is Luka only considered a superstar if he gets by the Warriors?
No, he's already on my superstar.
I know, and I know Luka's a better player than Jimmy, okay? But I'm just saying, like, there are qualifiers for Jimmy. Jimmy Butler is getting no, first of all, he doesn't have a true point guard. So now he has to take on the load of being the team.
Gabe Vincent hater.
Yeah, exactly. And then all these other guys aren't showing up. Like last night, Jimmy still put up some decent numbers. He was better in the second half when the game was already decided. But still, Jimmy does his thing. He shoots well. He defends on both. Like, he's such a good defender. And so, like, I think he's got almost the same amount of points in this series than the rest of the other team, of the rest of his team.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say I think Jimmy's got what, like 80 points this series, 70 some points, and I think the rest of the team this series has 70 or something like that.
I'm glad you brought up the there's not a finite number of superstars year to year, because that to me is the silliest thing when we break this thing down. Is, oh, there has to be 10. Oh, there has to be 6. Oh, there has to be 8. Whatever the number, I think it's a different number year to year. And the way that I sort of define superstar is, if we're paying this guy a supermax deal right now, if we were theoretically paying Jimmy Butler $47 million to be on this basketball team, would you feel comfortable paying Jimmy Butler $47 million? And I think the answer is yes. You would feel comfortable giving him that sort of money.
Think about this. Okay, if you want to cut it this way, Jimmy Butler is the best player on the number one seed in the East. And then you say, well, the regular season doesn't matter. Jimmy Butler, no one's playoff performance goes up like playoff Jimmy. That's why they call him playoff Jimmy. He's a better player in the postseason than he is in the regular season. He plays both ends. He doesn't do it athletically or dynamically like Steph or like KD, and he doesn't shoot like those guys. But He is, because of consistency and because of his winning, he is a superstar.
See, and I think because of the game we're playing in now, because length, positionalist basketball, and shooting above all else, time and time again, seems to be the difference maker. I think because Jimmy Butler doesn't excel at 3-point shooting like some of those other guys on that list, I do think that's why I have a harder time putting him in my superstar list, because he can be really consistent at times. But if his teammates and his shooters around him, like last night, aren't performing to their level, he has a hard time of willing you to victory at times.
All right. Somebody told Cap that they believe that the Bulls are going to lose Zach LaVine. We're going to play that for you coming up. If you want to weigh in on Jimmy Butler, 332-3776. We had some Bears conversation. You just heard some Sox talk. Anything on your mind? We're on later than normal, or later than we thought today, because we were going to be off at 5:30 for the White Sox, but their game has been postponed. So plenty of room for you, 312-332-3776.
Chicago's home for sports is on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
You know, the best thing that could have happened to not only the Sixers if they didn't make that choice, but maybe even Jimmy, though I think he's doing a good job of showing everyone in Miami what he can do. But for Jimmy and Embiid, like, think about Embiid and Jimmy if they would have stayed together right now. Like, that could, you know, they've tried Harden. They've tried different things. The Simmons thing never worked out. And think if Jimmy would have stayed there, the two of them. And maybe with that, like, two-headed star situation, then you could kill him from many different ways.
No, I'm with you. That would have... in retrospect, I think the Sixers would do anything they could to go back in time and change that. Because, yes, Jimmy Butler is exactly what Joel Embiid needs.
All right, so Cap now is back to talking to LaVar Ball. Is that right? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, apparently that did happen the other day.
So, like, I thought Chicago media did a really good job, and we even brought it up. Didn't I bring it up, too, about Lonzo recently, saying, should we get with LaVar and see? And everyone said, no, we're not calling LaVar. Don't call LaVar. Like, let Lonzo speak for himself. Let LaMelo speak for himself. You know, they're really good players. And to his credit, he sort of stayed out of the way. LaVar has stayed out of the way, and he hasn't been. A lot of people said, oh, I don't want any of the Ball kids because the dad's going to be a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
To his credit, the dad has not been a distraction. Barkley used to rip him.
Yeah.
Remember Steve Kerr would rip him?
Yeah.
Didn't we go viral one time with a Steve Kerr interview?
Yes.
Where he ripped LaVar Ball, saying it's everything what's wrong with being a parent or something like that?
Yes. I do, you know, I don't want to take us too off topic here because I know you want to play that sound, but you do have to wonder, hey, LaVar Ball got two of his kids into the NBA. So he did something right.
Oh, and he got the third one to UCLA because that kid had zero business going to UCLA before he screwed it up for himself. But
yes, yes. And so, you know, and he's been a champion for their cause at every turn. So even though he sometimes, I think, gets on people's nerves because he's out there and available when people want to talk to him, he has done something right in getting his kids to the NBA.
So Cap interviewed him for NBC Sports Chicago. And on that interview, he said that Lonzo, at least what he was saying, doesn't need surgery. He doesn't think he needs another surgery,
just
right?
Just needs more work in the pool.
Yes, that they're working him too much on the treadmill. And look, I wouldn't discount that. And the Bulls' injury record has not been a good one for many, many years. Like, who has really come out of there saying, and you said, you know what, they really rehabbed him well, and he's as good as new.
He was, you're right. It was an interesting thought, and then he went too far, though. He said, listen, I've been lifting weights for years. When he tried to give you his bona fides as to why you should listen.
Well, it's sort of like the Tom Brady thought process, right?
Pliability, flexibility.
Yeah,
no, I'm with you. It's a good thought, but don't sell me because you've been lifting weights for 40 years. That's why I should listen to you. Listen, your idea is good. I'm intrigued. Don't sell me as to why now.
So the Bulls have this history. So that was on Lonzo. Then he gave his answer on Zach LaVine. Now, there are several articles out there. There's a lot of smoke with Zach. A lot of smoke. I read one on Bleacher Nation Bulls today where they compiled all the people, Casey Johnson, Brian Windhorst, giving many different scenarios where Zach could leave. And Zach, with his exit interview, would not say that, yes, you know, I'm coming back to the Bulls.
Correct.
And basically, it makes you wonder, with Rich Paul and a powerful agency behind him, what's he going to choose? So this was LaVar Ball with Cap talking about Zach LaVine as a free agent.
Do you think Zach LaVine stays with the Bulls because he's a free agent? There's rumor he might be going to the Lakers.
You, like I said before, you are very, very smart. And you, I'm going to tell you like I told him. He's gone. And I'm going to tell you why. Okay, it started off Zach LaVine. Okay, now you get hurt. A few things happen. And guess who's doing all the big plays? All I hear is DeMar.
Right.
DeMar. He don't want to play second fiddle. And who don't want to go to L.A.? He won't go back to the West Coast. He'd be like, yeah, I think he's from the West Coast. Seattle? Washington?
Seattle.
Yeah, if he got a chance to go there, I guarantee you he ain't no fool because he like this. I'm in L.A. Even when I get paid, I know I can do some commercials or something. He's a good-looking guy, light-skinned. They're gonna love him in L.A. They get him Westwood. So they're going to offer him some money. Hey, he's going to go, hey, I'm going over there.
Now, look, take it with a grain of salt. It's LaVar Ball. And here's what I don't understand with that answer. Now, he could end up in L.A. I mean, people love to play for the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
But you are worried about being second fiddle to DeMar, and then you're going to go with LeBron and AD?
Yeah.
Well, how does that make any sense?
It doesn't. It doesn't. Unless one is the idea of being in L.A., is more appealing, and then you can set aside the idea that you are all right being the complimentary player, you know, to LeBron.
We're right, but then now all of a sudden, now that's for a different reason. His thought originally was, all I heard was Zach. Then to Zach's credit, Zach recruited DeMar, right?
Yeah.
And they hit it off right away and started training together. I never felt that there was any jealousy.
No.
And it became DeMar's team because, A, he was having such a good year, and because of Zach's injuries. Zach hurt his thumb, then Zach hurt his knee, and DeMar was the one constant who was always in the lineup.
Yes, I agree. I don't think if Zach leaves, I don't think it has anything to do with him not liking DeMar DeRozan getting top billing. It's all about Zach potentially wanting to go back to the West Coast, which I think is a possibility. But, you know, and whether that's, you know, finding his way to Portland or LA, you know.
So, again, like, you want to be the first guy. But first of all, any team with Zach as their number one isn't a good team.
Agreed. At least he hasn't proven that.
Right. And number two, you go to Portland, Dame, that's Dame's team.
Yes. As long as Dame is there, Dame is the top star. He is, oh, you know what, though? And I mentioned it. He is actually somebody who was a superstar for me, who's fallen off the superstar list this season, but could get back if he plays well. So, back to our superstar conversation.
What has he ever won?
One round, right? He got past
Jimmy's
the first, Western Conference Finals.
But Jimmy's got to be able to win it all to become a superstar.
No. I said if he gets the Heat to the NBA Finals, I might be willing to consider and put him into my superstar list. Now, he's on the almost superstar list for Jeff Meller.
Theo in the city. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Theo?
Hey, how's it going, Sylvie?
Everything's good.
It's, awesome. First time caller, long time listener. Been listening to you guys since you were, you know, Sylvie and Carmen. So,
yeah, thank you.
Yeah, man, I just want to say why Jimmy Butler is a superstar. You know, you said playoff Jimmy. That's where superstars are born. That's where superstars, look throughout NBA history, that's where superstars are born in the NBA playoffs. That's where Jimmy plays his best. I mean, this isn't one year. Jimmy just took Miami to the finals in 2020, and I know that was the bubble and everything, but still, that counts. Look at what he did in Minnesota. Led Minnesota to the playoffs, and they hadn't made the playoffs since Garnett was there. Excuse my language. Sorry about that. But, yeah, Jimmy's a superstar, man. And you asked a great question. I don't understand the hesitancy as to why people just can't say that he's a superstar. He's been putting in work for years now. And that's all I got to say, man. Thanks for having me.
I think he's too blue collar. I think, you know, he doesn't jump the highest. He doesn't shoot the best. He doesn't score the most. And I think a lot of people have just fit him in their little box, including Meller.
Listen, I'm open to it. I need to see more. I have a hard time believing that Jimmy Butler can lead a team to a title. And maybe that's on me. Maybe he'll prove me and everybody else like me wrong, and he'll have the last laugh, and I'll certainly be here to eat crow and take it. But I just think, I don't put him with the other guys that I mentioned. So he's just on the outside for me, looking in, and make me eat my words, Jimmy. Go out and lead the Heat to a title. Dude, I wonder, do Bulls fans root for Jimmy Butler in the Heat right now?
I do. And I like the Celtics. I don't dislike the Celtics. They're a fun team to watch.
I like both. I like
me too.
All these teams left teams in the playoffs. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of fun teams.
Right. Yeah. No. You're absolutely. That's a good point. Because no matter who ends up, whatever finals matchup we get, and whatever team ends up winning it, I won't be disappointed because they're all very likable teams. They have aspects where you can root for them, which is weird to say that about the Heat, considering how far we've come.
Well, right.
And, it's a LeBron thing.
And we've always liked the villain. There's no villain left, is there?
Not really. No.
Maybe people could say the Warriors.
The Warriors are
so
like,
and they haven't won in so long, and Clay. Right. Like, Clay's just getting back after all the bad luck with his injuries.
There's still the anti-Draymond contingency out there.
Yeah, sure.
I'm not part of it, but I know there's that facet of NBA fans.
I think it's a good comeback story with Clay. I think it's a good comeback story with that team after everything that they've been through for the last several years. KD leaving them.
Yep.
I want to see Steph back, but I love watching Luka play.
If you had to pin me down and say who are you rooting for most, I think it would be the Warriors to win another title. For me personally. And then I would like to see, I would be okay with seeing the Celtics. I'd like to see the idea of Jason Tatum elevating and becoming amongst, you know, being one of the others. He, for me, entering that superstar status.
Yeah.
Is he a superstar for you or not yet?
Yeah, I think he's just, he's, yes. He's,
all right.
Yes.
So I think we're, this is what we're defining.
Yeah, I mean,
you're
like,
a little bit more lax with your superstar
right,
status.
It depends. I mean, so like I compared him on Carmen and Yurko the other day when I was filling in when we did spring trading. Did you hear this part? You know, I always like to do, because I think NBA superstars are good comps with quarterbacks, right? Because we always talk about a quarterback. Is he a true star quarterback? Is he in that top tier, the top tier of quarterbacks? Like Russell Wilson has fluctuated. Russell Wilson, for several years, boosted himself up into that top tier. Jimmy Butler, to me, the comp that I gave is Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger isn't the most athletic, though he's pretty athletic. He doesn't have the best arm, and he may do it a little ugly at times, and he could rub people the wrong way at times.
Hmm.
But Jimmy Butler is not Tom Brady. Jimmy Butler is not Peyton Manning. Jimmy Butler is not Dan Marino. Jimmy Butler is blue-collar Ben Roethlisberger.
Interesting.
And he may need the running game, but he's going to make a lot of people better on his team. And they're going to win a ton of games with him.
I like that because at the end of the day, you always look at Jimmy's box score in a playoff game. And he somehow has like 35 or what he's done recently with these 40 points. Roethlisberger, every single game, it felt like he had 400 yards.
Yeah,
so
right.
It's a very good comp.
I feel almost like when you said Russell Wilson, that one rung a little more true to me with Jimmy Butler. And the problem is maybe Russell Wilson got superstar status too soon. And once we saw more, it was like, boy, I can envision winning a title with him, but I need a little more with him. And listen, maybe that's what it is. Superstars, certain guys are bigger superstars than others, right? And they don't need as much around them, but there are still superstars who, if you surround them with the right pieces, can go ahead and win championships as well.
I want to ask you a question about sports divas coming up next and who the biggest sports divas are. Have we just seen in the last 36 hours the example that this group of people are the biggest sports divas? We'll get to that coming up next.
It's Friday night. Who wants to get pucked? That's right. It's time for the Caesars Sportsbook Report. Jeff Mellor here to let you know your first bet with Caesars Sportsbook is risk-free up to $1,100. Just download the app and use the promo code RadioCZR. That's RadioCZR, and then place your first bet. If you win, congrats. If not, you'll get your wager back as a free bet. On the Caesars app right now, how about the over in the Battle of Alberta? It's set at 6.5 goals between the Oilers and Flames. Do you know what the score was in game one? How about 15 goals? That's right, it was 9-6. Were Gretzky, Curry, Messier, Coffey on the ice for Edmonton? How about Nieuwendyk and Gary Roberts for Calgary? No. It's not the 80s. It just feels like it. Love the over 6.5 in game two tonight. Let's ride the highs with McDavid, Draisaitl, Tkachuk, and Johnny Hockey. So go ahead and get started with a risk-free bet on Caesars. Just make sure you use that promo code RadioCZR when you sign up. Must be 21 and physically present in Illinois. New users only. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Paid as a single bet. Credit must be used within 14 days. See Caesars.com/promos for full terms. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000 and now on FM at 100.3 HD2.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
Which one of you from the golf show over there dropped their tee in the hallway?
What's going on, Merck?
I went to the bathroom.
That's
go get
it's
some
Merck
water.
All the way, tees in his pocket.
Yeah.
Who's got a tee in their pocket?
You find any range balls there, too? I use wooden tees. I hate that kind of tee.
So it wasn't you?
It's probably Yurko.
Right in the middle of the floor.
It's got to be
it
Yurko.
It was right in the middle of the hallway.
You can see the tee on Twitch, as you can always check us out on Twitch during live shows. Twitch.tv/ESPN 1000.
You know what? Since I'm not a golfer, And Bob the golfer from the Sanctuary gave us the shirts and everything. He throws in some hats.
Mm-hmm.
He gave us some golf balls.
Uh-oh.
And I didn't know the technology of golf balls these days, that the golf ball is softer. Is this a new thing?
Is that wait. Is Major League Baseball producing baseballs now or golf balls now?
I don't know. Merck, is this, do you not, is this?
It's like, they like compress more now.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a soft feel on the outside. Mm. Very interesting.
Feels
I'm like,
the same
wow.
To me.
Really? Maybe you don't have a good, maybe you need
I
some of my golf balls.
Well, when's the last time you've rubbed down some golf balls, Merck?
It's been a while, Jeff.
Okay.
It's been a while.
Huh?
Because he's playing with range balls. That's why. that's why. All right. So the Jimbo Fisher, Nick Saban thing has been outstanding.
Yes.
It's
yes,
been
it
outstanding.
Has.
Oh, you've heard all the audio, the fighting back and forth, and Jimbo Fisher yesterday just calling the press conference and just crushing Nick Saban, saying, I don't want to associate with him anymore. I'm not taking his phone call anymore. Dig up his past. Talk to former assistants. I had a chance to go back with him back in the day. I chose not to. I learned how to coach under Bobby Bowden. I learned how not to coach under Nick Saban. Or someone tweeted me, someone who I have great sports conversations with. He tweeted to me and his claim was, out of all these sports figures, like a lot of people like to say, oh, NBA players are the biggest divas. Or football quarterbacks who don't get hit anymore. Stuff like that. On and on and on. Is the biggest group, if we're stereotyping, the king of the campus college coach? Whether it be the great basketball coach or the king of the castle football coach like Nick Saban. Are those the biggest divas in all of sports?
I think absolutely. I think all you need to do is look at, and I think it's evolved that way because college coaches, whether they're football or basketball coaches, have so much power and have gotten such, you know, they've been, in some ways, they've been propped up with these huge salaries, you know, to the point where Nick Saban is the highest paid person in Alabama, the highest paid government official in Alabama. And so are many other football coaches in their states. And whereas because the NCAA dragged their feet for so long in compensating, quote, student athletes, when we all knew that they were actually professional athletes masquerading as students, because they dragged their feet for so long, they created this division where college coaches just never, you couldn't do anything. If you were an athlete, it was do as they say, and if you don't like it, leave, right?
Right.
They had all the power.
Always. And when their power, like, this is what happens. When the most powerful person on that campus gets challenged in any way, whether you're getting challenged by the students having too much power now and getting the NIL money, and it is the Wild West. I do agree with Saban on that point. But and then Jimbo Fisher, what happened? Jimbo Fisher recruited the best class in college football and beat Saban in that.
Yep.
And he feels threatened now.
Yes.
And that's why he goes out and he with the group of boosters, I think he was doing two things. I think he was, and I've heard a lot of people say this, Abdallah, I texted Abdallah too because I always go to Abdallah with Saban stuff. And Saban was doing a call to arms.
Yes.
That was his point of doing it to the booster saying, hey, they're kicking our ass right now. You guys got to
step up, right?
Step up and start paying because it is the Wild West out there. But I mean, for him to sort of like be a tattletale, to be the snitch and to call them out by name, isn't that everything that goes against every rule in the book?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's threatened. For the first time in a long, long time, I think Nick Saban truly feels threatened. And the problem is he's elevated himself and his program so high above everybody else that he's insulated himself to actually having to do a whole lot of work. A lot of times Alabama rolls out, and Tyler and I were discussing this last night, not just the first team, the second team of Alabama most times than not can beat the team that they're playing on the field that day.
Sure.
It might be able to field a ranked team with the second stringers.
Really? And so the actual coaching he needs to do by the time he gets to Saturday, I don't think he's had to do a whole lot for a long, long time. And that's why he left the NFL. Didn't like that.
Right. That would be funny if they had an A team and a B team, like in high school.
JV.
Yeah. Like, it would be cool if they, let's see how well Alabama could do with their B team. That would be fun.
UNC basketball has a a JV team, and Hubert Davis used to be the coach. That was the succession plan.
Oh, really?
You coach the JV, and then you go coach after
Who'd
Roy
they play?
Leaves. They played like weird schools. It was like JUCOs and stuff like that.
All right. So no White Sox game tonight. Thank you to Tyler and Randy Merkin. Len Casper, our only guest today. Meller, have a great weekend. Waddle's going to be back coming up on Monday. For Meller, I'm Sylvie. It's ESPN 1000. Have yourself a fantastic weekend.
It's the classic!
I am really excited.
That was a big thrill.
Hi, it's Andre Dawson, including myself, Ed Belfour.
Who's getting wild tonight? That's what I'm talking about, baby.
No high from you.
What?
No high from you.
I'd give him more buys than highs.
Waddle, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away. Waddle, waddle. Till the very next day. Bum, 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 bum.
And thank you to all and to all a good night.